Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back. Hour number two of Southern New England Sports Saturday on WEEI. Scott Cradishy here in Providence and out in Kansas City, Missouri, covering the Patriots and the Chiefs AFC Championship game tomorrow for ABC6. Their sports director, Nick Coit. And we are going to go back to your phone calls in just a moment. I did have two quick things, Nick, I wanted to get off of my chest.
Sure.
That are un-Patriots or football related. A couple of basketball things.
Great.
Let me start with the Boston Celtics. Kyrie Irving and the Celtics, in my opinion, need to give it a little bit of a rest with this off-the-court chatter about, well, the young guys aren't buying in. You know, I don't like the fact that there appears to be a little bit of a division being created here between the veterans and the young guys. They need to give this a rest. All these team meetings, speaking out to the media, well, you know, the young guys aren't on board, this and that. Give it a rest, okay? Just let it go. Be a team like you were these past few years with right. Irving, without Irving. I don't like this chatter that's going on right now because, to me, it is creating a little bit of a division between the Jaylen Browns, Jason Tatums of the world, and then the guys like Kyrie Irving.
I think that, and a lot of this, honestly, it's Kyrie. A lot of this is Kyrie. I think that he does have a point in some regards, but I think you're right, Scott. He's got to keep it in house. You know, I don't want to hear about that division between the veterans and the young players. Maybe there is one, but keep it in house. The other thing that I thought was interesting, and at first I was really fascinated by Kyrie's call to LeBron, because obviously that became a big story. But what I didn't like was that it overshadowed what was a great victory for the Celtics over the Raptors. That's right. The best team in the NBA. And you were on a 3-game losing streak. You were in desperate need of a win, and you closed things out. And Kyrie was the big reason. I mean, Kyrie was the closer down the stretch. If you talk about guys in the NBA that can close, he is up there near the top, if not the top guy, in terms of closing in the league these days. I mean, he is unbelievable. That shot he hit, I was joking on the newscast that night, that shot he hit on Kawhi Leonard, the long three, I was like, he hit that from Somerville, kid. Holy crap. It was, what a shot that was. But at the same time, him talking about LeBron and the call after the game overshadowed the victory. And it's good that he's realizing what he was as a young player, and he's showing some growth and maturity, but at the same time, speaking out about that overshadowed what was a good night in terms of the unity of the team and the way they played on the floor.
I agree. And to me, part of being a great leader is getting everybody on the same page. It's not, you know, kind of separating the young guys and the old guys. And I almost feel like that whole story about him calling LeBron and apologizing for the way he was as a young player was another shot at the young guys on this team. And I just didn't like that. So to me, let it rest. Okay. Try to bring this team together. Okay. Don't keep throwing this stuff out there for the media to grab onto that suggests that there is a division amongst the young and old on this team.
It was good, though, to see them after that happened, after the Raptors win, and they were at home again, and they've been very good at home, but another good win last night, too, and right. that was nice to see.
The other thing I want to talk about is, I don't know if you read these comments in Kevin McNamara's piece, but Ed Cooley and the Friars got off to a tough 0-3 start in Big East play.
I thought this was coming.
Okay, and then, to their credit, they picked themselves off the mat to get their first Big East win, and they've got a tough one tomorrow at Marquette, but I think they can go in there and beat the nationally ranked, I still call them the Warriors, not the Golden Eagles. in any event, so PC's Ed Cooley, after the disappointing loss to Georgetown in double overtime, was criticized by some, this guy included, for not having his kids foul at the end of regulation and then at the end of the first overtime. In both instances, the Friars were up by 3. And to me, there's two schools of thought here, okay? The one school of thought is you're up by 3. Let him play. Try to force him into a difficult three and take your chances to win the game that way. The other school of thought is under 10 seconds, some say under 8 seconds, even under 5, you want to foul them. Do not give them an opportunity to take a three-point field goal to tie the game. They can only go to the free throw line and at best hit 2 free throws, and they're going to have to follow you. So don't give them a chance at a game tying 3. So he heard the criticism and he addressed it before their last game. And I'm paraphrasing here because I couldn't pull up the quote. I couldn't find it again.
I was in the room for it, Scott. It was after the win over Seton Hall.
So here's what he said, and I'm paraphrasing, and you tell me if I'm inaccurate at all. He said, essentially, hey, look, fans have a right to their opinion. They pay a lot of money for their tickets, so they have a right to their opinion. And then he followed it up with, but some of them have never picked up a basketball or called a timeout in a game, right?
I don't think those were the specific words.
Tell me exactly what it said, but
it was pretty much what the question in the room was, you know, do you hear the outside noise and the criticism? And he started it with saying, well, you know, I appreciate that people come to the games, come to the dunk. You know, we appreciate the fans and you know, they have a right to their opinion. And you're right. It was along the lines of, you know, they haven't coached basketball. They haven't, you know. They haven't been in the situation to call timeout, not call timeout, whatever. But he said, right. You know, I wish I had, he ended it by saying, I wish I had, you know, the chance to stand over and criticize other people's jobs because a lot of people wouldn't keep their jobs. And it wasn't surprising out of Coach Cooley because he's said things, I think, like that before. I think it's his way of being playful but also wise, you know, sort of thing. But in this case, there was a lot of noise and a lot of criticism that came with the Georgetown loss and what happened at the end of that game. So you can continue your
I would rather
there.
Have him come out and just say, hey, you know, this is my stance on this situation. Either I do believe or I don't believe in fouling down up 3. And look, this is the reason they won at Boston College, because BC decided to do the same
exactly.
thing. They didn't foul them, and they hit the 3 at the end of regulation, won in overtime.
Right.
My point is this. I thought his comments reflected someone who, for being in his position, has a pretty thin skin. The fact of the matter is, you're getting paid millions of dollars to be a very high profile. You're in a high profile position in the state of Rhode Island, right? You know, Providence College basketball, for all intents and purposes, is the pro team in the state of Rhode Island, has a huge following. And the bottom line is, criticism is part of that job. It comes with the territory. And you know, if he had just said, hey, fans have a right to their opinion, you know, we appreciate them coming to the dunk, they pay a lot of money for the tickets, he should have just let it in there. But then he followed it up with, but some of them have never, you know, picked up a basketball or been in a position to call a timeout. So it's like, well, which is it, Ed? Do fans have a right to their opinion, and are you okay with them expressing their opinions, or are you upset that they've expressed an opinion that maybe wasn't a popular one in your eyes? It's, you know, which is it? That's my point. I've said all along, and I even qualified my comments. I posted on Facebook, I can't believe Ed Cooley and Providence didn't foul there up 3. And you know, it started a huge long thread. And I said, look, Providence College is lucky to have this guy as their head coach. He has done a fantastic job of building this program, okay? I will not deviate from that. He has done an amazing job. Just as Bill Belichick has done an amazing job with the New England Patriots. But Bill Belichick does something, you know, makes a bonehead move or does something that we think is worth criticizing, we're going to do it, either as members of the media or fans of the team. We criticized Bill Belichick for his decision to have Gronk on the field for the miracle in Miami. We criticized him a few years ago for the game plan in Miami, handing the ball to Steven Jackson the entire first half. We criticized him for the onside kick that same year when they were up at home against Philadelphia. Even the greatest get criticized. Yeah, I just think when you show that it bothers you, I don't know. I felt like it was a little bit of a thin-skinned response. That was my take from it.
Okay, I think that, and you know what? I think that's in some ways fair. I think that's what Ed Cooley does, though. I think that's him. I've seen him take playful jabs before or something like that. I think that's Ed Cooley himself. I think that's part of his personality. And so, you know, I think take that as you will. I think that's just how he is. I'm going to say this, though, Scott.
I think they should have won that game, to be honest with you.
Oh, absolutely.
I think they should have won that game.
But let me say this about the fans, okay? because there were some fans that were on Twitter. I got a couple of responses. Ian got a couple of responses. And there were other people out there that responded this way. And I think Friar fans are, their expectations are up. And that's a great thing. That's a great thing. But I would advise them to not forget how good Ed Cooley has been for your program and how lucky they are to have Ed Cooley. He makes one wrong mistake. You fall to 0-3 in Big East play. And there were people on Twitter that were hinting at he should lose his job and the accountability thing. That, to me, Scott, is utterly ridiculous.
I agree.
For one game.
Agree.
Guys are going to screw up. The worst part is I've gotten tweets that say, I've gotten them, people that cover Providence have gotten them and said, like, well, you softy reporters don't ask about that. No. That doesn't happen. I'm in the room. I ask. Ian Steele asks, Kevin McNamara asks, Brendan McGarry asks, anybody that covers the team asks the right questions, okay? You can't criticize us for that. What do you want us to do? This isn't a White House investigation. Kevin asked the question to Ed, why didn't you foul at the end of the game? Ed answered. Prior fans didn't like the answer. Too bad. You have the right to your opinion. That's it. What do you want us to do? That's it. You want Ed to lose his job? Like that to me was utterly ridiculous. And I just don't know why sometimes there's this need to like feel somebody needs to be held accountable for not fouling at the end of the game. It's one game. It didn't happen. They didn't foul. It screwed up. They screwed up and they lost the game. They know that. They've moved on. They win, they beat Seton Hall, and now they have an opportunity to beat Marquette. Like, it's one game. And I appreciate that Friar fans have the expectations, but don't think that the right questions aren't being asked here. They are. There's just, it's one game and you move on. That's it. So that's what I'll say is that I think there was a little bit of an overreaction from Friar fans because of what happened and how the loss went down. So,
yeah,
but manage your expectations a little bit, I would say.
I agree with that. I the people that respond saying, oh, he should be fired, that is absurd.
Utterly ridiculous.
And when I see stuff like that and comments like that, I immediately respond and say, come on now. I mean, you're being ridiculous. I mean, this guy's done a great job for the program.
Fantastic job.
Yeah. So, but all I'm saying is, I think you should handle those situations a little differently. That's my opinion. But
sure.
You know what? Everybody handles them differently. Everybody has their own personality. Some people can roll with the punches and not show that it affects them, like a Belichick, for example. And other people, you know what? They want to fire back and defend themselves like Ed. So I guess to each his own. But I, that was my impression when I read Kevin's piece. I'm like, wow, he let that stuff get to him, you know? So anyway, I just wanted to get those two thoughts off my chest.
Sure.
Let's get back to the Patriots and the AFC Championship game tomorrow. And we've got loaded phone lines at 401-737-1287. Let's say hello to Doug in Plymouth. Good morning, Doug. You're next on Southern New England Sports Saturday on WEEI.
Cordy, how we doing?
Hi, Dougie.
How are you?
Good, man. What's happening?
I want to talk about the Pats-Chargers game, actually. I'm going to be a little bit of a Debbie Downer.
Okay.
It was a good win, but I don't think it was as good as everybody's playing it up to be.
Okay.
The first half was good. They
yep.
go into the locker room up 35-7. They come out in the second half. They only score 6 points.
You know what, Doug, though?
That can't happen.
You know what, Doug? I think at that point, the game was over.
I agree.
To be honest.
I think they were just managing their way to a victory.
Scored 21 points in the second half. They're a touchdown and an onside kick away from every Pats fan sitting on the edge of their seat saying, okay, like what's going on? So their last four possessions, the Pats had 9 plays for 2 yards.
Again, I think it was over.
I agree.
I honestly think they
were trying to manage their way and manage the time through the second half and just, get out of there with a victory. I would not be concerned about that second half at all.
Into it. Yeah.
Fans were filing out by the late third quarter.
Yeah, it was I was already at work for postgame. Like I was already running around. I'm like, I'll keep an eye on it, but 35-7 at halftime mentally, the Chargers were like, how do you come back from that? I get the concern, Doug, but I just think at that point, you're right. I think they were just managing things because I think they knew they were advancing.
It's just me. I just hope that they can have or not have the same mentality going into the Chiefs. If they do come up with a lead at halftime, know that they have to. I would rather see a whole football game being played.
Sure. You want the 60-minute sort of thing, but I think at that point, You know, when the Chargers are mentally out of it like that, and when it's that big of a deficit at halftime, you know, like when the Chiefs went to Foxborough early in the year, the score, we forget, the score was 24-9. The Patriots were up, and the Chiefs had not done much offensively in the first half, and then they went gangbusters in the second half. Tyreek Hill ran all over the place in the second half. But I think that's different because I think the Chiefs have that explosive potential on offense. I mean, they can put up points like nobody's business. Just look at the Rams Chiefs game this year. I mean, it was unbelievable. So I think you know in this game, and I don't think anybody was mentally out of that game during the regular season. I think you know in this game it's going to take a 60-minute effort because I think it's just going to be that close. I think the teams are going to trade blows. I think that's the way it's going to go.
I hope so.
Yeah, me too.
Like I said, that's just me being a little bit of the Debbie Downer watching the second half. Six plays, 80 yards, touchdown. 12 plays, 80 yards, touchdown. I'm like, what is going on out there?
They probably finally found some sort of rhythm, but again, at that point, I think the Pats knew that they were already booking their flights to Kansas City.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Thanks, Doug.
All right, Courtney.
Thanks for the phone call, Doug. Is Doug always a negative Debbie Downer type of guy?
No, it was. Dougie's usually pretty upbeat, pretty positive. I think there's probably some worry because this is going to be a tough task for the Patriots to come in here and try to win.
This is a completely different animal than what we saw last week.
Totally. It's going
to
be difficult.
Don't expect the Patriots to jump out to a 38-7 lead on the Chiefs tomorrow. Trust me. Not going to happen.
No.
401-737-1287, the phone number, text line 37937. Bernie's in West Warwick. Good morning, Bernie. You're next on Southern New England Sports Saturday.
Good morning, Scott, and good morning, Nick.
Hey, Bernie.
Hey, Bernie.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, I am looking for history to help the Patriots win tomorrow's game in Kansas City because I remember darn well 1985, the Patriots go in as a wild card team and, of course, went to Miami the Orange Bowl. They hadn't won in 1966, and they came out victorious 31-14. And I want to tell you, that game, what I remember most about that game from that season is that it made me an optimistic Patriot fan because I do recall that when they were in the playoffs that year, I kept thinking, oh, no, they're going to lose to the Jets. They're going to lose to the Raiders. But they won both. And then I says, oh, well, maybe the Patriots are going to win in Miami. So I was on that squish the fish chant, so to speak, there, which, of course, happened. And you want more history, Scott and Nick? Andy Reid's record is 12-13, and how many Super Bowl wins does Bill Belichick have?
Well, I think you know the answer to that. You could tell us, Bernie.
Well,
Bernie, you just brought back great memories, though. That 85 run to the Super Bowl, which was the Patriots' first, that was magical. They were the first wild card team to win three road playoff games and get to a Super Bowl. They won at the Jets in the wild card round. They won at the Los Angeles Raiders at the Coliseum in the divisional round. And then I was lucky enough, I was a freshman in college, I was down at that AFC Championship game at the old Orange Bowl in Miami because my roommate was from West Palm Beach. And I went down for that squish the fish game when they beat the Dolphins and broke the curse of the Orange Bowl to get to the Super Bowl. That was a fun ride for Patriot fans.
Yeah. So do you think that maybe history is on the Patriots' side? Because that's how I'm viewing tomorrow with the Patriots' victory. I'm hoping that this history goes in the Patriots' favor.
I'm hoping that experience is on their side, to be honest with you, Bernie. Hoping that the experience of Tom Brady as opposed to Patrick Mahomes will be a difference maker. I'm hoping that Andy Reid somehow manages to fumble things up and screw things up and that Belichick has the upper hand in the coaching matchup. That's what I'm hoping for. I don't know what's going to happen, to be honest with you. As I said at the beginning of the show, I hope I'm wrong, but if I had to pick a game, I picked a team, I would pick Kansas City just because of the Patriots' troubles on the road this year.
Right.
But I would never, ever bet against Belichick and Brady.
Well, and I'll say this too, Bernie. You know, say what you want about Andy Reid. This might be the most talented offense and talented team that Andy Reid has had. I mean, this is history is what it is, but this is a darn good team the Chiefs have.
What about the defense? I mean, I think the only one who stands out is Tredavian Clowney.
That's Houston.
That's Houston.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right.
On defense, I can't name anybody on Kansas City's defense who sticks out.
Well, they have a couple of guys that have big names, and Eric Berry is one of them, and it sounds like he's been taken off the injury report. He's going to play this week, which is a big boost for them, and that'll certainly help the defense. And when you get the Chiefs' defense at home, they've been a lot better this year statistically than they are on the road. And I think that probably goes for a lot of teams. But there's a massive split between the Chiefs' defense at home and on the road. And so that's going to help them. So, but will defense be a factor in this game? I think it's going to, if it is for either team, it may be the defense that maybe makes the big play in the fourth quarter. That I think it's going to be that kind of game, because I think the offenses are both executing at a high level right now. And so the defense that makes that big play, maybe forces a big turnover, I think is going to win the game.
All right, Bernie, thank you for the phone call. 401-737-1287, the phone number. Text line 37937. You're listening to Southern New England Sports Saturday on WEEI.